overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
Provides us with the opportunity to stop and enter into the holy instant of now. The more we cultivate the sacred moment, we begin to sense that what we are is timeless awareness itself. We move from the finite into the infinite, if you will, from form into essence, from the finite self to the infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of our being. And one breath at a time, we remember. There is a chant that says, I am remembering who I am. And we would say that again and again, I am remembering who I am. Ramana Maharshi said, if you put a glass of water in the ocean, who are you? Are you the ocean of love, or are you the vessel through which the ocean flows? And as we begin to know ourselves as a vast field of divine love, well, then we can ask the question, what would love do here? How would love respond in this holy instant? In our revealing service this morning, Jody Rutenberg shared a story of a German shepherd who this week was in a car accident, thrown from the vehicle, and yet went to the freeway and sat until the police came so that he could then take them to the crash site where the owners could be rescued. An act of love. And when we can witness this act on the outside, the very witnessing ignites the love on the inside. And so the opportunity and the challenge for all of us is to see things with fresh eyes, not with the eyes of the local self, because the local self has conditioning and programming and judgments and opinions and conclusions, and we all have a local self. But we also have a universal self. And every Sunday, my invitation is for you to remember that. In the mystical teaching of the Quran, they have a very simple formula that says, when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember this divine love awakens within us. And just like that German shepherd who was bonded to his humans, we also have feelings of connection to one another. And we have a sign in the sanctuary here that says, Serving the One. And then we get to ask, is there anything excluded in the One? And if everything is the One, well, then we get to expand our field of service. And so we live in the question. This month of January, as we start a new year, we're exploring the theme, How then shall we live? And each one of us gets to ask that every day when we wake up. How then shall we embrace this day that we've been given? Could we embrace it with ease and let life be easy? Or we could let it be challenging and difficult and troubling. We're always a choice point. So I choose to let it be easy. How then shall we live, knowing that we shall die? And then we embrace the idea of death. We start with the death of an idea. And we realize if we've evolved on this planet, oftentimes the thoughts, the beliefs, the judgments that we held, the conclusions that we had have fallen away, only to give way to a greater awareness, a greater understanding, a greater sense of belonging to this planet, to each other. And so we live in the question, how then shall we live? And what shall we allow to die? Could we allow a relationship to die that no longer serves us? A friend of mine was sharing how she did a burning bowl ceremony, and she wrote on pieces of paper everything that needed to die, needed to leave, needed to go, was no longer serving her. And then symbolically she burned those pieces of paper in a bonfire, letting go of the thought, the pattern within her that she no longer required or needed. And there was a sense of lightness, a sense of freedom in a simple act of letting go. And so we live in the question, who am I? And we invite that question to take us into a deeper realization that I am not my finite self. I am not David Leonard, even though I have David Leonard as a vehicle and through which to travel. But who I am is truth unveiling herself. Who I am is peace flowering in a jubilant and beholden heart. Who I am is divine love overflowing. I am overflowing with love. Who I am is nobody. I hear Emily Dickinson, I am nobody, who are you? Are you nobody too? Well, then there's a pair of us. How boring to be a somebody. How public like a frog to spend your livelong day on an admiring bog. And so with the simple act of reciting a poem, we step out of the finite self into a place that's free of me, of the egoic identification. And so by asking, who am I, we discover who we are. We next ask the question, what do I love? And we wait upon the Lord, upon the law, to reveal. We find that love shows up when we ask the question, what do I love? I love harmony. I love ease. I love joy. I love possibilities. And when we open to the field of possibility, we step out of yesterday and its programming, and we open to the present moment and the possibilities with hope that we might awake to a greater sense of divine love, unfolding herself as us, living in the question. Our mind is 10 times more active. And then we ask finally the question, can I bring my gifts to the world? And then we inquire again, what are those gifts? They unveil themselves. I'm learning the gift of patience. I have a very demanding little pug who is so slow when he does his business. And when it's cold out, I've learned to breathe until he finds that right and perfect place to lift his leg, until he finds that right and perfect little corner of the yard to finish up his business. And then he waits for me to lift him and place him in his stroller. He waits for me to carry him up the steps. He waits for me to carry him down the steps. He waits by his bowl for me to feed him. And in this beautiful relationship with a one-eyed black pug, I cultivate the gift of patience, the gift of abiding love, and I rejoice in my role as his servant. And so we live in this beautiful place of the question. And this Sunday morning I'm going to ask the question, how do we return home to the place that is our true nature? Coming home to ourselves. Coming home to ourselves. I hear that beautiful song from The Wiz that says, when I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. I wish I was home. I wish I was back there with the things that I'm knowing. And so when we look at the calligraphy above my head, it says, I have arrived, I am home. A calligraphy that was penned by Thich Nhat Hanh in the year 2000 when I studied with him. And the great message is that we're already there. A place of belonging. So this Sunday, I invite you to go home, not to a geographical place, but to a place of belonging that exists within you and all around you. When I think of home, I think of a space where there's love overflowing. I invite you to rest as that love and to discover a home that is always there. As Dorothy said at the end of The Wizard of Oz, never look any further than your own backyard, because if it isn't there, you've never lost it to begin with. And so we look within and we find that kingdom of home, kingdom of heaven, within and all around, waiting for us to arrive and know it as if for the first time. With playfulness, with curiosity, with joy and ease, I invite you to open your eyes, enter into this space. It's so nice to see familiar faces. I think that's Maddie back there.
Hi.
I recognize that beautiful blonde head of hair, even with a mask on. So this is a new year. You know, and I don't do resolutions, but I really get excited. I mean, this is my 33rd year of ministry, and I've just entered my first year numerologically. My husband is a numerologist. And, you know, in numerology, you go through 9-year cycles, and he preaches the gospel of numerology to me ever since I dated him in 1974 in the Embarcadero in San Francisco. Several of you hadn't even been born by then. And that's what he did for a living. He would do numerology readings, and he did t-shirts. He painted t-shirts. Sold him for $5 a piece. He got really rich. So I married a man with a lot of prospects. Anyway, the upside of that story is that I've left a 9-year cycle, and at the end of a 9-year cycle, you're supposed to let everything go that no longer serves you, Terry girl. You don't have to burn them up in the fire. You just have to be willing. And so he's been on my case Have you let go of everything you need to let go of? It's a time for purging, David. And I said, well, for me, Trey, it's a time of stepping into something different, more than it is about letting go. Because the past falls away when you have a new vision for yourself in a different order of being. A lady at our revealing service was talking about a church in Huntsville. I won't say the kind of church, but they had a section in that church for heathens. And I said, you know, that's where I'd probably be sitting. But as the pathetic realization that they would have places like that in churches in Huntsville, I realized those places are there for us to say, I've had enough. Just like when you've had enough of the ignorance in your spiritual pattern, you get to step into something that makes sense for you. When I came into the science of mind, and it was in probably 1980, I said, I will never go into a church. Religion is the opiate of the people. And yet I went into a center in Atlanta, and I heard a message being spoken that was a message of empowerment, a message of responsibility, that you create your own reality by what you choose to think. And so I was kind of a mess. I needed therapy, Terry Boy, but I couldn't afford therapy, but I could afford to go to the classes, and I could afford to go on Sunday mornings. And I started small by putting a dollar in the plate. I moved up to a $5 thing, and then I was up at $10. I thought, boy, you know, now I'm a tither. And you know, the beautiful thing about what I learned was you can't outgive God. And when you make a commitment to a spiritual path, a path of growth, well, then it meets you where you are. And you start with your own confused, programmed consciousness. But ultimately, we're given the choice to either anchor ourselves in that with what we know, with the certainty of our opinions, or to let go of our conclusions and step into the I don't know place. It was Ralph Waldo Emerson that said, we all seek to be certain, but only to the degree that you are uncertain is there any hope for you. Well, isn't that great news for America at this stage? Because there's a lot of uncertainty in this country. And you know, it's always been like this. Lately, I've been noticing that these documentaries, and I like watching documentaries because they kind of put things in perspective. You know, we've all been programmed by life, and they had one, it was called The KKK and the Movies. I know, shaking her head. And it showed how, at the turn of the century, the white-hooded KKK people were very popular in white America. And one of the most famous silent movies was called Birth of a Nation. And it's all about the Klan in the South and the burnings on the things and how this was a propaganda machine and almost a political thing. And that's our history. That's what we came out of. Now, when you can see that we've come a long way to get our independence. They also had a documentary on CNN about the Civil War told from the perspective of the African Americans, the slaves, a perspective that we don't often see. So the opportunity is to look at our past, not with eyes of condemnation, but kind of in a strange sort of say, look how far we've come. And it's hopeful that maybe we can learn from the past and then emerge into a higher order of being on the planet. You know, it's funny, when the old Civil War in 1865, 63, I think it was, they had the 13th Amendment, which liberated, emancipated the slaves. And then you had the 14th and 15th, which gave them, the men, the right to vote. Women still were not allowed the right to vote, I think, until 1920-something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've come a long way, haven't we, as a country? And we came from kind of dysfunctional roots. But the willingness to see that without condemning it and saying, I am part of the evolution of consciousness on the planet. And if you're sitting in this room, you are part of the evolution of consciousness on this planet. I've been given the gift of enough money to travel on the planet. Trey and I took a trip to Portugal, and we were in a little city called Évora. And Évora was known for the Inquisition. And they would have a town square where they would pillory those who would stand up to the church at the time. And I remember standing in that town square in Évora, Portugal, thinking, this looks familiar to me, Trey. And they still have the places where they would shackle them to the pillars and whatever they did during the Inquisition, if you dare to question the authority of the church. Now, we've come a long way. And the reason I say that is because that's a time for hope. Adam and I were talking about, or I think it was you, Terry Boyd, that was talking about biodiversity and the intelligence that we find in nature. There's a wonderful documentary called The Fantastic Fungi. I think that's the name of it, Terry, and I've watched it twice now. And it's about the wisdom in nature. And how, and when my very first ministerial class, we had a little book called, by Margaret Wheatley, called The Simpler Way. And it was looking at the intelligence within bacteria and fungus and how they are higher order operating systems. They work in harmony with one another. So could we as a human species learn from bacteria and fungi to work as a whole, not as separate factions that are against one another? The days of conflict are over, but only when we embrace the darkness can we find the light. And that's our challenge, that's our opportunity in this journey that we're all on. So I'm talking about coming home to ourselves this Sunday, and I pulled out a little book called Coming Home by Lex Hickson. This is a Sufi guy, and he's no longer on the planet, but he talks about coming home as not something we do, as something we awaken to. And it's really quite beautiful. And it, you know, it's kind of hard for us in the Western world because we're so oriented toward doing and achieving and setting goals. And we identify as the seeker, seeking truth, seeking enlightenment. And he says, that's not the way it works. It works entirely differently. My Zen calendar this morning says it all. I'll read it to you. It says, no one becomes enlightened. The term simply implies an absence of what you are not. In other words, an awakening from the phantom identity unto a normal state of what you are. This is Wi Wu Wi. He's a Chinese mystic. You awaken from the false identity of me into the ultimate realization of the One. And that's the challenge. We're teaching this beautiful class on Wednesday mornings from Llewellyn Van Lee, and it's all about learning to see through the eyes of oneness, not through the separate self. And so then when you look out through your eyes and you see, oh, I don't know, an octopus. You relate from the octopus. You relate from the dog. You relate from the tree. Here's how Lex Hickson puts it. To abide as the awareness in the simplicity and luminosity of present moment, without will or without effort, you understand what it means to come home. You can't will it. You can't force it. You can't really, if you seek it, you're still identifying as the seeker. So the Sufis say, stop being the seeker and start being the sought. This something, that's what's happening to my beloved Adam. He's finding the teacher everywhere, you know? And sometimes the teacher shows itself in life by showing you your resistance, showing your reaction. And then you realize, do I want to put my attention on the reaction, or do I want to find love and respond in a different way? So he's saying that coming home is a homecoming that is said to lead from time to eternity and from death to immortality. We move out of the illusion of time and space as something separate into a timeless reality, into an eternal reality, and then you realize that what we are was never born and never dies. Boy, there's a whole different thing. And then if you've lost, like yesterday was the 6th anniversary of my beloved's birth transition, and I feel him all the time. And I'm so grateful that Jody Rutenberg's in my life because she reminds me that that's because he's still here. And so when we can even relate to somebody who's transitioned from this mortal coil and realize that their spirit, and spirit was never born and spirit never dies, well, then you begin to see spirit is in all things. Spirit is what we are. Spirit is what you are. Huh. And so then could spirit ever be attached to form, knowing that the spirit probably has had lifetime after lifetime? He goes on to say at the very beginning of this book, enlightenment is not a magical transcendence of our human condition, but rather it's the full flowering of our humanity. Huh. We've been given this human experience so that we can let it flower in compassion, into a recognition of interconnectedness, into a sense of belonging. Both Susan and Sylvia brought soup to somebody this week that was hungry, and they both shared how good it felt to serve and to share. So could we flower in our humanity toward one another, disclosing a unity and an equilibrium at the heart of love and suffering that we call life? I love Thich Nhat Hanh. He was commenting on His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Both are Buddhist monks. And His Holiness has written a book called The Art of Happiness. And Thich Nhat Hanh spun it around. He said he should have written a book and called it The Art of Suffering. He says, because only by embracing suffering can you find happiness there. And he says, start small, with a little sufferings, like you didn't get the parking place at the place that you wanted. Well, that's a little suffering, ain't it bad? But then you parked over here and you got a nice walk-in. So really, you weren't suffering that big. You suffer because so-and-so didn't send you a Christmas card, but then you see suffering when you stop being attached. Did you get the Christmas card? So could we know this homecoming in the midst of our Jody's got a great big, great Dane in her house that's peeing all over the house and keeping her up at night. And yet she's embracing that suffering with her big, big heart. So he's saying the same thing here. The flowering of humanity, disclosing a unity and an equilibrium at the heart of love and suffering that we call our lives. All existence is revealed to the enlightened human being as a seamless whole, and as one divine life. So could we come home to that one life? I shared with you last week in Mark Nepo's beautiful little book, We're More Together Than Apart. He showed a photograph of a little boy, maybe 8 years old, who was blind and had no arms. He was a victim of a bombing in World War II. And the little boy, it looks like he's kissing a piece of paper because he can't see. And what the boy was doing was he was trying to read Braille with his lips. So then Mark Nepo, in his poetic fashion, said, in oneness, we can know that we are this young boy who has been damaged by a war. We can also know that we are the ones that were the violent ones. We can know that we are the ones that are cleaning up that atrocity. And we are the ones that are creating the Braille so that the young boy can read. And we are the ones that are hoping for a new future where we don't need violence and war as an alternative. All because we don't see it with the eyes of judgment and condemnation and resentment, but with a sense of justice. And justice comes in strange, beautiful ways. You know, Seamus reminded me of a court case this week where we felt justice flowered in America. And that gives me hope to know that we are speaking truth in a country where sometimes truth doesn't want to be spoken, and we're willing to face this consciousness in our planet that would have us point the finger and point at other and seeming separate, because, you know, in oneness, there is no other. In oneness, by its very nature, includes diversity. Last week, I quoted that Amanda Gorman, who gave that beautiful poem at last year's inauguration called Together We Rise. And she talked about being hopeful that together we come together to rise up in consciousness so that a greater order of being could be spread here on the planet. So could we take that to heart? Where hope and action, and the action might just be listening to your neighbor. The action might be to not turn away when you're uncomfortable. The action might be to embrace an animal that needs some help because you can. And then we get to see how we are connected, and are we comfortable being connected? This is the lovely book that we're teaching. And if you want to, you can still join the class. We only had one last week. And Llewellyn starts off this book by talking about the first rule. And he says, the first rule is we have to let go of me, the idea that I have the answers, the idea that I am the one who's in charge. He says, it shifts to a different sense of who we identify ourselves are. So let me just give you a tiny taste of Llewellyn, because he speaks to my soul. He says, how to live from our divine center of ourself in the midst of everyday life. Ask yourself, how can you live from your divine center in the midst of everyday life when it's a dog-eat-dog world out there and people are pointing the finger and blaming it on others? And he goes on to say, once we step outside of the illusion of our separate self, and you know, that's the illusion, that there is a you separate from me. In oneness, there's only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect, and it's unfolding through all creation. So you begin to see it in the trees. And in the octopus, I love that documentary, The Octopus Teacher. I mean, I fell in love with that little octopus. And I thought, you know, there's hope for me. You know, I'll never eat calamari again. Anyway, once we step out of the illusion of our separate self, a radically different picture emerges. Our divine nature exists in a dimension of oneness. And unlike the ego, which always looks out from its own self-interest, that's the me consciousness, that it's all about me. My favorite Zen saying is, you know why you're so miserable? Because everything you talk about is all about you and you aren't. Well, people don't want to hear that, do they? So it's not about you. Unlike the ego, which always looks out from its own self-interest, the self, with the big S, the self that we all share, the self reflects a vision of oneness in which each individual and their parts, and I would include all creation, everything in creation, is not just the human species, it's the animals, it's the plants, it's the fungi, it's the fish, it's the birds. All creation is part of this oneness in which each individual part is nourished according to their real needs And a glimpse of the self, with the big S, gives us a sense of our interconnected oneness, in which nothing is separate. Everything is an expression of oneness that is dynamically alive. Every person, every stone is this oneness. Everything is connected and interdependent. Thich Nhat Hanh has a beautiful phrase. He calls it interbeing. He says, when you look at the piece of paper, do you see just the paper or do you see the tree that created the paper and the sunlight that went into the tree growing and the water that nourished the tree and the earth through which it grew? Can you see the interdependence, the interconnectedness of it all? Each person, every stone is this oneness. Everything is connected and interdependent. And our individual self really is a universal self. And it is all a living organization, living organism of light and love. Now just play with that, sit with that. You're an organism, I don't use that word often, an organism of light and love. The Sufis say that, and he's a Sufi, he says, when you come onto the planet, you come here with light and you come here with love. And when you leave this mortal coil, you take the light with you, but you leave the love behind. So isn't that sweet to know that Joe O'Neill is still sitting there loving on Sylvia, and the love never went anywhere. Lastly, he says, our light is the light of the world, and our divine consciousness is the spiritual consciousness of the world, and nothing is separate. And so the whole premise of this book is awakening the world. We need to see the world awakening. I need to see you guys awakening to a true nature, to the good, to the God, to the truth and the beauty. It's all within yourself. So could we cultivate that awareness within ourselves? And you know, we do that just by stopping, ringing the bell, going within, or maybe holding a dog in your arms like Jody does. Or, you know, there's so many ways to go home and to learn to listen to God. And your task, if you agree to do it, is to open to what that would be in your life. I happen to be a gardener, and I find so much solace in working in nature. It was Thoreau that said, nature is the thinnest veil to spirit. It's a mute gospel. And we had last Sunday night, a week ago today, one of those big blizzards where the snow came down heavily. And I have beautiful gardens. But the problem is when I woke up to that picturesque sight outside in the morning, boughs of my trees had broken and were lying in the street. My vitex tree, a huge branch, was snapped in half and hanging there. The hemlock trees, their boughs were literally on the ground. My akubas were over on their sides. My Mahonia beeli, tall plants, were lying on the ground. And so being like they're my children, I went out with a broom. And I'm banging the snow off them. And I'd be covered like a snowman. I'd come in, take my wet clothes off, put dry clothes on, went out back with my broom. And I did some good by just helping the trees. I could see that they said, oh, thank you, thank you. Because the weight of the snow and the boughs was literally. And so what if in the recognition as a gardener that I was listening to the plants, they were saying, help, help. And then, of course, the birds were all demanding to be fed at the feeder. So Trey went out and filled up the feeders. We have a dog bowl on the front sidewalk for every dog that walks past the house. Little did I realize that all the robins now are sitting on the dog bowl, splashing in the dog's water bowl, drinking the water. So we make sure the water bowl is good for the birds who are drinking out of the dog bowl and in the bird baths, all a part of this interconnectedness. It was the Chinook Indians that would turn to nature and say, teach me and show me the way. So could we be willing to do that in this journey home, knowing that, you know, we talk so much about going within and finding the truth within, but also look without, because it's also the kingdom of heaven on the outside. Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the earth, but he also said the kingdom of heaven is within and it's all around, but we don't see it. So could we find that we're looking at our own self, that everywhere in nature, it's a reflection of the divine. And when we begin to see with the eyes of oneness, we're evolving into that higher order, into that yuga, where we can almost telepathically communicate. You know, I literally can hear my pub thinking. I know that's crazy. And Adam does too. He's kind of like the dog whisperer in the church. Jody is as well. You begin to realize that they're communicating. I watched this wonderful documentary on Thanksgiving. It was called My Life as a Turkey. And if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's so powerful because it's about a man who lives in the middle of nowhere and someone drops off some wild turkey eggs And he hatches them, and all the baby turkeys are sitting on his chest, and they imprint with him as their mother. And he raises these turkeys, and he starts talking gobble-gobble with them. He understood what they were saying to him. And it's so beautifully, mystically wonderful, because he says they're superior to humans, because they actually love and they care, and they have a dynamic within them. So here's a man who is isolated, living in the middle of nowhere by himself. He's completely transformed by these little wild turkeys that are intelligent, that have a sense of community, and that imprinted on him as their mother. And let me tell you, he moved into the role of mother that was very loving and empowering and wanting to set them free. You know, like Maddie has been set free to be the beautiful wild turkey that she is. Not bound in a cage like we keep the turkeys, but to be free and to know who she is. So I decided to go to my little book, The Gardener. And I'm going to use this as a prelude to going to the closing meditation. It's where the gardener teaches his young apprentice how to listen to life, how to listen to the language of the one that's speaking to us all around us. And we might start there in this beautiful Alabama day. You know, last week, all my camellias were in full bloom. Everything was just, the Edgeworthia was blooming, the Mahonia bealeii, even the gardenias were starting. And then we had the snow. And now I go into the garden and all the flowers are brown. But you know what? There's buds of potential waiting underneath those brown flowers, ready to come out. So could we embrace life, even with the suffering that we see outside of us? Driving to the center this morning, did you notice all the trees and all the branches that are down? That's Mother Nature pruning her plants. And boy, can she do a great job. So here's the gardener, and this is, well, you can head back there, and after this, I will go into a closing meditation. Let's see, here it is. This is called The Language of Life. And it says, it's time we learn the language of life. Now, remember, the outer teacher takes you to the inner teacher, but the greatest teacher is life. So he's sharing with the young apprentice how to listen. And he's saying, it's time you learn to listen, the language of life. He said, what is that to the wise gardener? And the gardener said, it's the language that the world which surrounds you expresses. It's the way the rest of the universe communicates to you. And the young man says, I think I understand, said the young boy. With you, I've learned to read the trees and their message, to listen to the flowers and the birds, to feel the insects, and to discover the hidden lessons in everything that surrounds me. Teach me and show me the way. And he says, sometimes nature, life, tries to speak to you directly and send you a message. Will I know that life is trying to tell me something? He asks the wise gardener. And he says, you will simply know, the gardener answered. There is something within everyone that lets them know that what has just happened means something. Something important that one has to decide. You know, it's in the not knowing that we discover, not in the knowing. And so could we be attentive and vigilant when life is showing us something? He goes on to say, coincidences do not exist. There are no accidents in the universe. So everything is by divine appointment. And so I've learned to live in this awareness that everything is grace, the givingness, the unmerited givingness of the universe. And when life gives us uncomfortable things, that's grace as well. And when you make a determination to live your life consciously, with a free consciousness, everything that's bound is going to come up. And that's a teacher. So embrace which comes up, the bound, the fearful, the narrative, the victimhood, so that it can be met. You recognize it, you allow it, you integrate it, you nurture it, and then it lets go of you. So he's telling this to the young man. Coincidences do not exist. And when something happens that calls your attention in a special way, it's because there's a message behind it. There's something shining through from the deep. It wants to show you. And how does one read those messages, the young man asked. He says, do not read them with your head, said the gardener, but read them with your heart. He says, the language of life is in some way similar to the language of dreams. It speaks in images, and it makes an impact on your heart that creates a clear sensation that allows your mind to then perhaps open to a clarity and an understanding that it wouldn't have had you drawn conclusions and opinions and judgments. to just open to that clarity from the wisdom of the heart. It says it's great to share the soup that you've made with the neighbor who's sick. The clarity from the heart that says it's good to take the broom out and knock the snow off the trees that are laden down, who are having a hard time coping. Listen to the wisdom of the heart. He says, when the heart is prepared to listen, nothing happens just because it feels like it. And then he says, I think I understand you, says the young man. But I would need time to be able to read clearly the language of life, he says. And the gardener, in his sagacity, in his old age, he laughed and he looked at the young man with love in his eyes. And he says, you've got all the time in the world, young Maddie. He said, make use of the time and open your heart to life. Listen to it. And the messages will become clear to your soul under the pleasant robe of silence. Behold the lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they struggle. Yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. So could we turn to the lilies of the field and discover the gospel of nature? So with Raoul's ringing of the mindfulness bell, I invite you to close your eyes and go within. The place we started is the place we'll finish. That still point, that vast, timeless awareness of the self with the big S. And just like the drop of water that returns to the ocean, we begin to sense ourselves as this vast field of awareness out of which thought arises. But for the purpose of this closing meditation, we're going to identify ourselves as the context, not the content of the mind. The context of the mind is pure open-hearted awareness. The content of the mind might be thoughts and beliefs and opinions and judgments. But since we've rung the mindfulness bell, we've turned off the channel of thought. And we're resting as that undifferentiated awareness. And we become conscious now of the breath, the sacred breath. Breath is another name for spirit. And so we realize spirit is in this place. Spirit is within me. Spirit is within you. Spirit is within everything. And in that exquisite thread of spirit, we are connected. The same spirit was in those wild turkeys as was in their mother, the man. The same spirit was in that German shepherd that was in the police, that was in the Hemsy driver. The same spirit is awakening within the depths of life itself on this beautiful planet that we share. And it's seeking to communicate to us, like the gardener said to the young apprentice. And so we learn to listen to the language and know that there are no accidents, coincidences, that everything is here on purpose for us. And so we are attentive in the moment. My Sufi teacher said, be vigilant. The teacher is everywhere. You know, when a teacher, the Latin word for educate is educare, and educare means to draw out that which is within. And so the outer teacher awakens this inner teacher. And then when we see life as the teacher, life begins to draw out of us the realization that we are home, right where we are, and that everything is embraced in this place called home. Not as a destination, but as a place within, and ultimately a place everywhere. So we rest in that divine awareness that the thing we're looking for, we're looking with, and we're looking at. And so we start seeing it now, everywhere, revealed. The kingdom of heaven is within and all around, and we witness you. It says in the Quran, "Am I not your Lord?" To which we, the creation, say, "Yes, we witness you. We remember you." And so we come here on Sunday morning and throughout our days to remember the truth of who we are, to remember what it is that we love, to live in the question, how then shall we live? Recognizing that everything is our own self. And if we've done it to the least of these, we've done it to God, to life. And so we enter into that compassionate space that knows unconditional love and acceptance. And we identify as the we consciousness, not the me consciousness anymore. We come together in this moment. We bind our hearts as one, for we all form a family created by the one. Resting in that intimate connection, we smile. We say, "I have arrived, I am home." In a place where there's love overflowing. And with the light of awareness and this unconditional love, we say yes, 1,000 times yes. And we put our hands together over our heart and we bow to the sacred moment as we say together, "I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
Unveiling herself within and all around.
Unveiling herself within and all around.
Waiting to be recognized.
Waiting to be recognized.
Allowed.
Allowed.
And expressed.
And expressed.
In unique and creative ways.
In unique and creative ways.
As we offer our gift to the world.
We offer our gift to the world.
With joy and cheerful expectancy.
With joy and cheerful expectancy.
And bundles of hope.
And bundles of hope.
Trusting in this unfoldment, knowing that we planted the seeds of intention, we open our eyes, we open our hearts, we open our hands, and we trust, knowing that all is good and all is God. Unveiling herself through each and every one of us. Thank you for sending in your tithes. Financial statements out on the table.
Will there be an annual...
annual meeting last Sunday of the month. Mr. Trey will be here. And we will have a brief board meeting after that, so there won't be a board meeting prior to that. And the directory is out there. Jody Gutenberg is going to compile that, a new one. So you have a lot to do, my children. Stay safe. And do something kind.
Podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.